What oath will you swear never to return, and never to lead any living creature hither by word or sign?"
"Mash-ten knows," said Gollum with a sidelong glance at Frodo. "Yes, he knows. We will promise master, if he saves us. We'll promise to it."
"Yes." He crawled to Frodo's feet.
"Save us, nice master," he whined. "Smeagol promises to precious, promises faithfully. Never come again, never speak, no, never, no, precious, no."
"Are you satisfied?" said Faramir. "Yes," said Frodo. "At least you must either accept this promise or carry out your law. You'll get no more, but I promised that if he came to me, he should not be harmed, and I would not be proved faithless." Faramir sat for a moment in thought. "Very good," he said at last. "I surrender you to your master, to Frodo, son of Drogo. Let him declare what he will do with you."
"But, Lord Faramir," said Frodo, bowing, "you have not yet declared your will concerning the said Frodo, and until that is made known, he cannot shape his plans for himself or his companions. Your judgment was postponed until the morning, but that is now at hand."
"Then I will declare my doom," said Faramir. "As for you, Frodo, in so far as lies in me under higher authority, I declare you free in the realm of Gondor to the furthest of its ancient bounds, save only that neither you nor any that go with you have leave to come to this place unbidden. This dome shall stand for a year and a day, and then cease, unless you shall before the term come to Minas Tirith and present yourself to the lord and steward of the city. Then I will entreat him to confirm what I have done and to make it lifelong. In the meantime, whomsoever you take under your protection shall be under my protection and under the shield of Gondor. Are you answered?"
Frodo bowed low. "I am answered," he said, "and I place myself at your service, if that is of any worth to one so high and honourable."
"It is of great worth," said Faramir. "And now, do you take this creature, this Smeagol, under your protection?"
"I do take Smeagol under my protection," said Frodo.
Sam sighed audibly, and not at the courtesies, of which, as any hobbit would, he thoroughly approved. Indeed, in the Shire, such a matter would have required a great many more words and bows.
"Then I say to you," said Faramir, turning to Gollum, "you are under doom of death, but while you walk with Frodo, you are safe for our part. Yet if ever you be found by any man of Gondor astray without him, the doom shall fall, and may death find you swiftly, within Gondor or without, if you do not well serve him. Now answer me. Whither would you go? You were his guide, he says. Whither were you leading him?"
Gollum made no reply.
"This I will not have secret," said Faramir. "Answer me, or I will reverse my judgment."
Still Gollum did not answer. "I will answer for him," said Frodo. "He brought me to the Black Gate, as I asked, but it was impassable."
"There is no open gate into the Nameless Land," said Faramir.
"Seeing this, we turned aside and came by the southward road," Frodo continued, "for he said that there is, or there may be, a path near to Minas Ithil."
"Minas Morgul," said Faramir.
"I don't know clearly," said Frodo, "but the path climbs, I think, up into the mountains on the northern side of that vale where the old city stands. It goes up to a high cliff and so down to that which is beyond."
"Do you know the name of that high pass?" said Faramir.
"No," said Frodo.
"It is called Kirith Ungol."
Gollum hissed sharply and began muttering to himself.
"Is not that its name?" said Faramir, turning to him.
"No,"
said Gollum, and then he squealed as if something had stabbed him.
"Yes, yes, we heard the name once, but what does the name matter to us? Master says he must get in, so we must try some way. There is no other way to try, no."
"No other way?" said Faramir. "How do you know that? And who has explored all the confines of that dark realm?"
He looked long and thoughtfully at Gollum. Presently he spoke again.
Take this creature away, unborn. Treat him gently, but watch him. And do not you, Smeagol, try to dive into the falls. The rocks have such teeth there as would slay you before your time. Leave us now and take your fish. Unborn went out, and Gollum went cringing before him. The curtain was drawn across the recess. Frodo, I think you do very unwisely in this, said Faramir. I don't think you should go with this creature. It's wicked. No, not altogether wicked, said Frodo. Not wholly, perhaps, said Faramir, but malice eats it like a canker, and the evil is growing. He'll lead you to no good. If you will part with him, I'll give him safe conduct and guidance to any point on the borders of Gondor that he may name. He wouldn't take it, said Frodo. He'd follow after me as he long has done, and I've promised many times to take him under my protection and to go where he led. You wouldn't ask me to break faith with him. No, said Faramir, but my heart would, for it seems less evil to counsel another man to break troth than to do so oneself, especially if one sees a friend bound unwitting to his own harm. But no, if he'll go with you, you must now endure him. But I don't think you are holden to go to Cirith Ungol, of which he has told you less than he knows. That much I perceived clearly in his mind. Don't go to Cirith Ungol. Where then shall I go? Said Frodo. Back to the Black Gate and deliver myself up to the guard? What do you know against this place that makes its name so dreadful? Nothing certain, said Faramir. We of Gondor do not ever pass east of the road in these days, and none of us younger men has ever done so, nor has any of us set foot upon the mountains of Shadow. Of them we know only old report and the rumour of bygone days. But there is some dark terror that dwells in the passes above Minas Morgul. If Cirith Ungol is named, old men and masters of law will blanch and fall silent. The valley of Minas Morgul passed into evil very long ago, and it was a menace and a dread while the banished enemy dwelt yet far away, and Ithilien was still for the most part in our keeping. As you know, that city was once a strong place, proud and fair, Minas Ithil, the twin sister of our own city. But it was taken by fell men, whom the enemy in his first strength had dominated, and who wandered homeless and masterless after his fall. It is said that their lords were men of Numenor, who had fallen into dark wickedness. To them the enemy had given rings of power, and he had devoured them. Living ghosts they were become, terrible and evil. After his going they took Minas Ithil, and dwelt there, and they filled it, and all the valley about, with decay. It seemed empty, and was not so, for a shapeless sphere lived within the ruined walls. Nine lords there were, and after the return of their master, which they aided and prepared in secret, they grew strong again. Then the nine riders issued forth from the gates of horror, and we could not withstand them. Do not approach their citadel. You will be espied. It is a place of sleepless malice, full of lidless eyes. Do not go that way. But where else will you direct me? Said Frodo. You can't yourself, you say, guide me to the mountains, nor over them. But over the mountains I'm bound, by solemn undertaking to the council, to find a way or perish in the seeking. And if I turn back, refusing the road in its bitter end, where then shall I go among elves or men? Would you have me come to Gondor with this thing, the thing that drove your brother mad with desire? What spell would it work in Minas Tirith? Shall there be two cities of Minas Morgul, grinning at each other across a dead land filled with rottenness? I would not have it so, said Faramir. Then what would you have me do? I know not. Only I would not have you go to death or to torment. And I don't think that Mithrandir would have chosen this way. Yet since he's gone, I must take such paths as I can find, and there is no time for long searching, said Frodo. It's a hard doom and a hopeless errand, said Faramir. But at the least, remember my warning. Beware of this guide, Smeagol. He's done murder before now. I read it in him. He sighed. Well,
So we meet and part, Frodo, son of Drogo. You have no need of soft words. I don't hope to see you again on any other day under this sun. But you shall go now with my blessing upon you, and upon all your people. Rest a little while food is prepared for you. I would gladly learn how this creeping Smeagol became possessed of the thing of which we speak, and how he lost it, but I will not trouble you now. If ever beyond hope you return to the lands of the living, and we retell our tales, sitting by a wall in the sun, laughing at old grief, you shall tell me then. Until that time, or some other time beyond the vision of the seeing stones of Numenor, farewell. He rose and bowed low to Frodo, and drawing the curtain, passed out into the cave. Chapter 7 Journey to the Crossroads. Frodo and Sam returned to their beds, and lay there in silence, resting for a little, while men bestirred themselves, and the business of the day began. After a while water was brought to them, and then they were led to a table where food was set for three. Faramir broke his fast with them. He had not slept since the battle on the day before, yet he didn't look weary. When they'd finished, they stood up. "May no hunger trouble you on the road," said Faramir. "You have little provision, but some small store of food fit for travellers I have ordered to bestow in your packs. You will have no lack of water as you walk in Ithilien, but don't drink of any stream that flows from Imlad Morgul, the Valley of Living Death. This also I must tell you. My scouts and watchers have all returned, even some that have crept within sight of the Morannon. They all find a strange thing. The land is empty. Nothing is on the road, and no sound of foot or horn or bowstring is anywhere to be heard. A waiting silence broods above the nameless land. I don't know what this portends, but the time draws swiftly to some great conclusion. Storm is coming. Hasten while you may. If you are ready, let us go. The sun will soon rise above the shadow." The hobbits' packs were brought to them, a little heavier than they had been, and also two stout staves of polished wood, shod with iron, and with carven heads through which ran plaited leathern thongs. "I have no fitting gifts to give you at our parting," said Faramir, "but take these staves. They may be of service to those who walk or climb in the wild. The men of the White Mountains use them, though these have been cut down to your height and newly shod. They are made of the fair tree Lebethron, beloved of the woodwrights of Gondor, and a virtue has been set upon them of finding and returning. May that virtue not wholly fail under the shadow into which you go." The hobbits bowed low. "Most gracious host," said Frodo, "it was said to me by Elrond Half-Elven that I should find friendship upon the way, secret and unlooked for. Certainly I looked for no such friendship as you have shown. To have found it turns evil to great good."
Now they made ready to depart. Gollum was brought out of some corner or hiding-hole, and he seemed better pleased with himself than he had been, though he kept close to Frodo and avoided the glance of Faramir. "Your guide must be blindfolded," said Faramir, "but you and your servant Samwise are released from this, if you wish." Gollum squealed and squirmed and clutched at Frodo when they came to bind his eyes, and Frodo said, "Blindfold us all three, and cover up my eyes first, and then perhaps he'll see that no harm is meant." This was done, and they were led from the cave of Heneth Anun. After they had passed the passages and stairs, they felt the cold morning air, fresh and sweet, about them. Still blind, they went on for some little time, up and then gently down. At last the voice of Faramir ordered them to be uncovered. They stood under the boughs of the woods again. No noise of the falls could be heard, for a long southward slope lay now between them and the ravine in which the stream flowed. To the west they could see light through the trees, as if the world came there to a sudden end, at a brink looking out only onto the sky. "Here is the last parting of our ways," said Faramir. "If you take my counsel, you will not turn eastward yet. Go straight on, for thus you will have the cover of the woodland for many miles. On your west is an edge where the land falls into the great vales, sometimes suddenly and sheer, sometimes in long hillsides. Keep near to this edge and the skirts of the forest. In the beginning of your journey you may walk under daylight, I think. The land dreams in a false peace, and for a while all evil is withdrawn. Fare you well, while you may." He embraced the hobbits then, after the manner of his people, stooping and placing his hands upon their shoulders and kissing their foreheads. "Go with the good will of all good men," he said. They bowed to the ground. Then he turned, and without looking back, he left them and went to his two guards that stood at a little distance away. They marvelled to see with what speed these green-clad men now moved, vanishing almost in the twinkling of an eye. The forest where Faramir had stood seemed empty and drear, as if a dream had passed. Frodo sighed and turned back southward. As if to mask his disregard of all such courtesy, Gollum was scrabbling in the mould at the foot of a tree. "Hungry again already?" thought Sam. "Well, now for it again."
"Have they gone at last?" said Gollum. "Nasty, wicked men. Smeagol's neck still hurts him. Yes, it does. Let's go."
"Yes, let us go," said Frodo. "But if you can only speak ill of those who showed you mercy, keep silent."
"Nice master," said Gollum. "Smeagol was only joking. Always forgives, he does. Yes, yes, even nice master's little fixes. Oh, yes, nice master, nice Smeagol."
Frodo and Sam didn't answer. Hoisting their packs and taking their staves in hand, they passed on into the woods of Ithilien. Twice that day they rested and took a little of the food provided by Faramir. Dried fruits and salted meat, enough for many days, and bread enough to last while it was still fresh. Gollum ate nothing. The sun rose and passed overhead unseen, and began to sink, and the light through the trees to the west grew golden, and always they walked in cool green shadow, and all about them was silence. The birds seemed all to have flown away or to have fallen dumb. Darkness came early to the silent woods, and before the fall of night they halted, weary, for they had walked 7 leagues or more from Henneth Annwn. Frodo lay and slept away the night on the deep mould beneath an ancient tree. Sam beside him was more uneasy. He woke many times, but there was never a sign of Gollum, who had slipped off as soon as the others had settled to rest. Whether he had slept by himself in some hole nearby, or had wandered restlessly prowling through the night, he did not say. But he returned with the first glimmer of light, and roused his companions.
"Must get up. Yes, they must," he said. "Long ways to go still, south and east. Hobbits must make haste."
That day passed much as the day before had gone, except that the silence seemed deeper. The air grew heavy, and it began to be stifling under the trees. It felt as if thunder was brewing. Gollum often paused, sniffing the air, and then he would mutter to himself and urge them to greater speed. As the third stage of the day's march drew on, and afternoon waned, the forest opened out, and the trees became larger and more scattered. Great ilexes of huge girth stood dark and solemn in wide glades, with here and there among them hoary ash trees, and giant oaks just putting out their brown-green buds. About them lay long lawns of green grass, dappled with celandine and anemones, white and blue, now folded for sleep. And there were acres populous with the leaves of woodland hyacinths. Already their sleek bell-stems were thrusting through the mould. No living creature, beast or bird, was to be seen, but in these open places Gollum grew afraid, and they walked now with caution, flitting from one long shadow to another. Light was fading fast when they came to the forest end. There they sat under an old gnarled oak that sent its roots twisting like snakes down a steep, crumbling bank. A deep, dim valley lay before them. On its further side the woods gathered again, blue and grey under the sullen evening, and marched on southwards. To the right the mountains of Gondor glowed, remote in the west, under a fire-flecked sky. To the left lay darkness, the towering walls of Mordor, and out of that darkness the long valley came, falling steeply in an ever-widening trough towards the Anduin. At its bottom ran a hurrying stream. Frodo could hear its stony voice coming up through the silence, and beside it on the hither side a road went winding down like a pale ribbon, down into chill grey mists that no gleam of sunset touched. There it seemed to Frodo that he descried far off, floating as it were on a shadowy sea, the high dim tops and broken pinnacles of old towers forlorn and dark. He turned to Gollum. "Do you know where we are?" he said.
"Yes, master. Dangerous places. This is the road from the Tower of the Moon, master, down to the ruined city by the shores of the river. The ruined city, yes. Very nasty place, full of enemies. We shouldn't have taken men's advice. Hobbits have come a long way out of the path. Must go east now, away up there." He waved his skinny arm towards the darkling mountains. "And we can't use this road? Oh, no. Cruel peoples come this way, down from the tower."
Frodo looked down onto the road. At any rate, nothing was moving on it now. It appeared lonely and forsaken, running down to empty ruins in the mist. But there was an evil feeling in the air, as if things might indeed be passing up and down that eyes could not see. Frodo shuddered as he looked again at the distant pinnacles now dwindling into night, and the sound of the water seemed cold and cruel. The voice of Morgul Duin, the polluted stream that flowed from the Valley of the Wraiths. "What shall we do?" he said. "We've walked long and far. Shall we look for some place in the woods, behind where we can lie hidden?"
"No good hiding in the dark," said Gollum. "It's in day that hobbits must hide now. Yes, in day."
"Oh, come," said Sam. "We must rest for a bit, even if we get up again in the middle of the night. There'll still be hours of dark then. Time enough for you to take us a long march, if you know the way." Gollum reluctantly agreed to this, and he turned back towards the trees, working eastward for a while along the straggling edges of the wood. He wouldn't rest on the ground so near the evil road, and after some debate they all climbed up into the crotch of a large holm tree, whose thick branches, springing together from the trunk, made a good hiding place and a fairly comfortable refuge. Night fell, and it grew altogether dark under the canopy of the tree. Frodo and Sam drank a little water and ate some bread and dried fruit, but Gollum at once curled up and went to sleep. The hobbits didn't shut their eyes.
It must have been a little after midnight when Gollum woke up. Suddenly they were aware of his pale eyes, unlidded, gleaming at them. He listened and sniffed, which seemed, as they had noticed before, his usual method of discovering the time of night.
"Are we rested? Have we had beautiful sleep?" he said. "Let's go."
"We aren't, and we haven't," growled Sam. "But we'll go if we must." Gollum dropped at once from the branches of the tree onto all fours, and the hobbits followed more slowly.
As soon as they were down, they went on again with Gollum leading, eastwards, up the dark, sloping land. They could see little, for the night was now so deep that they were hardly aware of the stems of trees before they stumbled against them. The ground became more broken, and walking was more difficult, but Gollum seemed in no way troubled. He led them through thickets and wastes of brambles, sometimes round the lip of a deep cleft or dark pit, sometimes down into black, bush-shrouded hollows and out again. But if ever they went a little downward, always the further slope was longer and steeper. They were climbing steadily. At their first halt they looked back, and they could dimly perceive the roofs of the forest they had left behind, lying like a vast, dense shadow, a darker night under the dark, blank sky. There seemed to be a great blackness looming slowly out of the east, eating up the faint blurred stars. Later the sinking moon escaped from the pursuing cloud, but it was ringed all about with a sickly yellow glare. At last Gollum turned to the hobbits.
"Day soon," he said. "Hobbits must hurry. Not safe to stay in the open in these places. Make haste."
He quickened his pace, and they followed him wearily. Soon they began to climb up onto a great hogback of land. For the most part it was covered with a thick growth of gorse and whortleberry, and low, tough thorns, though here and there clearings opened, the scars of recent fires. The gorse bushes became more frequent as they got nearer the top. Very old and tall they were, gaunt and leggy below, but thick above, and already putting out yellow flowers that glimmered in the gloom and gave a faint, sweet scent. So tall were the spiny thickets that the hobbits could walk upright under them, passing through long, dry aisles carpeted with a deep, prickly mould. On the further edge of this broad hill back they stayed their march, and crawled for hiding underneath a tangled knot of thorns. Then twisted boughs, stooping to the ground, were overridden by a clamouring maze of old briars. Deep inside there was a hollow hall, rafted with dead branch and bramble, and roofed with the first leaves and shoots of spring. There they lay for a while, too tired yet to eat, and peering out through the holes in the covert, they watched for the slow growth of day. But no day came, only a dead brown twilight. In the east there was a dull red glare under the lowering sky. It was not the red of dawn. Across the tumbled lands between, the mountains of the Æthelduath frowned at them, black and shapeless below, where night lay thick and did not pass away, above with jagged tops and edges outlined hard and menacing against the fiery glow. Away to their right, a great shoulder of the mountain stood out, dark and black amid the shadows, thrusting westward. "Which way do we go from here?" asked Frodo. "Is that the opening of the Morgul Valley, away over there beyond that black mass?"
"Need we think about it yet?" said Sam. "Surely we're not going to move any more today, if day it is."
Perhaps not," said Gollum. "But we must go soon to the crossroads. Yes, to the crossroads. That's the way over there. Yes, master."
The red glare over Mordor died away. The twilight deepened as great vapours rose in the east and crawled above them. Frodo and Sam took a little food and then lay down, but Gollum was restless. He wouldn't eat any of their food, but he drank a little water and then crawled about under the bushes, sniffing and muttering. Then suddenly he disappeared.
"Off hunting, I suppose," said Sam, and yawned.
It was his turn to sleep first, and he was soon deep in a dream. He thought he was back in the Bag End garden looking for something, but he had a heavy pack on his back, which made him stoop. It all seemed very weedy and rank somehow, and thorns and bracken were invading the beds down near the bottom edge.
"A job of work for me, I can see, but I'm so tired,"
he kept on saying. Presently he remembered what he was looking for. "My pipe," he said, and with that he woke up.
"Silly," he said to himself,
as he opened his eyes and wondered why he was lying down under the hedge. "It's in your pack all the time." Then he realized, first that the pipe might be in his pack, but he had no leaf, and next that he was hundreds of miles from Bag End. He sat up. It seemed to be almost dark. Why had his master let him sleep on out of turn, right on till evening?
"Haven't you had no sleep, Mr. Frodo?" he said. "What's the time?"
"Seems to be getting late."
"No, it isn't," said Frodo. "But the day is getting darker instead of lighter. Darker and darker. As far as I can tell, it isn't midday yet, and you've only slept for about 3 hours."
"I wonder what's up," said Sam. "Is there a storm coming? If so, it's going to be the worst there ever was. We shall wish we were down a deep hole, not just stuck under a hedge."
He listened. "What's that? Thunder or drums, or what is it?"
"I don't know," said Frodo. "It's been going on for a good while now. Sometimes the ground seems to tremble. Sometimes it seems to be the heavy air throbbing in your ears."
Sam looked round. "Where's Gollum?" he said. "Hasn't he come back yet?"
"No," said Frodo. "There's not been a sign or sound of him."
"Well, I can't abide him," said Sam.
"In fact, I've never taken anything on a journey that I'd have been less sorry to lose on the way. But it would be just like him, after coming all these miles, to go and get lost now, just when we shall need him most, that is, if he's ever going to be any use, which I doubt."
"You forget the marshes," said Frodo. "I hope nothing has happened to him. And I hope he's up to no tricks. And anyway, I hope he doesn't fall into other hands, as you might say. Because if he does, we shall soon be in for trouble."
At that moment a rolling and rumbling noise was heard again, louder now and deeper. The ground seemed to quiver under their feet.
"I think we're in for trouble anyhow," said Frodo. "I'm afraid our journey is drawing to an end."
"Maybe," said Sam.
"But where there's life, there's hope, as my gaffer used to say, and need of victuals, as he most ways used to add. You have a bite, Mr. Frodo, and then a bit of sleep."
The afternoon, as Sam supposed it must be called, wore on. Looking out from the covert, he could see only a dun, shadowless world, fading slowly into a featureless, colourless gloom. It felt stifling, but not warm. Frodo slept unquietly, turning and tossing, and sometimes murmuring. Twice Sam thought he heard him speaking Gandalf's name. The time seemed to drag interminably. Suddenly Sam heard a hiss behind him, and there was Gollum on all fours, peering at them with gleaming eyes.
"Wake up, wake up, wake up, sleepies," he whispered. "Wake up, no time to lose. We must go, yes, we must go at once. No time to lose."
Sam stared at him suspiciously. He seemed frightened or excited. "Go now? What's your little game? It isn't time yet."
"It can't be tea time even. Leastways not in decent places where there is tea time."
"Silly," hissed Gollum. "We're not in decent places. Time's running short, yes, running fast. No time to lose. We must go. Wake up, master, wake up." He clawed at Frodo, and Frodo, startled out of sleep, sat up suddenly and seized him by the arm. Gollum tore himself loose and backed away.
"They mustn't be silly," he hissed. "We must go. No time to lose."
And nothing more could they get out of him. Where he had been, and what he thought was brewing to make him in such a hurry, he would not say. Sam was filled with deep suspicion, and showed it, but Frodo gave no sign of what was passing in his mind. He sighed, hoisted his pack, and prepared to go out into the ever-gathering darkness. Very stealthily Gollum led them down the hillside, keeping under cover wherever it was possible, and running, almost bent to the ground, across any open space. But the light was now so dim that even a keen-eyed beast of the wild could scarcely have seen the hobbits, hooded, in their grey cloaks, nor heard them, walking as warily as the little people can.
Without the crack of a twig or the rustle of a leaf, they passed and vanished. For about an hour they went on, silently, in single file, oppressed by the gloom and by the absolute stillness of the land, broken only now and again by the faint rumbling, as of thunder, far away, or drum beats in some hollow of the hills. Down from their hiding place they went, and then, turning south, they steered as straight a course as Gollum could find, across a long broken slope that leaned up towards the mountains. Presently, not far ahead, looming up like a black wall, they saw a belt of trees. As they drew nearer, they became aware that these were of vast size, very ancient, it seemed, and still towering high, though their tops were gaunt and broken, as if tempest and lightning blast had swept across them, but had failed to kill them or to shake their fathomless roots.
"The crossroads, yes," whispered Gollum,
the first words that had been spoken since they left their hiding-place.
"We must go that way."
Turning eastward now, he led them up the slope, and then suddenly there it was before them, the southward road, winding its way about the outer feet of the mountains, until presently it plunged into the great ring of trees.
"This is the only way," whispered Gollum. "No paths beyond the road, no paths. We must go to the crossroads, but make haste, be silent."
As furtively as scouts within the campment of their enemies, they crept down onto the road, and stole along its westward edge under the stony bank, grey as the stones themselves, and soft-footed as hunting cats. At length they reached the trees, and found that they stood in a great roofless ring, open in the middle to the sombre sky, and the spaces between their immense boles were like the great dark arches of some ruined hall. In the very centre four ways met. Behind them lay the road to the Morannon. Before them it ran out again upon its long journey south. To their right the road from old Osgiliath came climbing up, and crossing, passed out eastward into darkness. The fourth way, the road they were to take. Standing there for a moment filled with dread, Frodo became aware that a light was shining. He saw it glowing on Sam's face beside him. Turning towards it, he saw, beyond an arch of boughs, the road to Osgiliath running almost as straight as a stretched ribbon down, down into the west. There, far away, beyond sad Gondor, now overwhelmed in shade, the sun was sinking, finding at last the hem of the great slow-rolling pall of cloud, and falling in an ominous fire towards the yet unsullied sea. The brief glow fell upon a huge sitting figure, still and solemn as the great stone kings of Argonath. The years had gnawed it, and violent hands had maimed it. Its head was gone, and in its place was set in mockery a round rough-hewn stone, rudely painted by savage hands in the likeness of a grinning face, with one large red eye in the midst of its forehead. Upon its knees and mighty chair, and all about the pedestal, were idle scrawls mixed with the foul symbols that the maggot folk of Mordor used. Suddenly, caught by the level beams, Frodo saw the old king's head. It was lying rolled away by the roadside. "Look, Sam," he cried, startled into speech. "Look! The king has got a crown again!" The eyes were hollow, and the carven beard was broken, but about the high stern forehead there was a coronal of silver and gold. A trailing plant with flowers like small white stars had bound itself across the brows as if in reverence for the fallen king, and in the crevices of his stony hair yellow stone-crop gleamed.
"They cannot conquer forever," said Frodo,
and then suddenly the brief glimpse was gone. The sun dipped and vanished, and, as if at the shuttering of a lamp, black night fell. Chapter 8 The Stairs of Cirith Ungol. Gollum was tugging at Frodo's cloak and hissing with fear and impatience.
"We must go," he said. "We mustn't stand here. Make haste."
Reluctantly Frodo turned his back on the west, and followed as his guide led him, out into the darkness of the east. They left the ring of trees and crept along the road towards the mountains. This road, too, ran straight for a while, but soon it began to bend away southwards until it came right under the great shoulder of rock that they had seen from the distance. Black and forbidding it loomed above them, darker than the dark sky behind. Crawling under its shadow the road went on, and rounding it sprang east again and began to climb steeply. Frodo and Sam were plodding along with heavy hearts, no longer able to care greatly about their peril. Frodo's head was bowed, his burden was dragging him down again. As soon as the great crossroads had been passed, the weight of it, almost forgotten in Ithilien, had begun to grow once more. Now, feeling the way become steep before his feet, he looked wearily up, and then he saw it, even as Gollum had said that he would. The city of the Ringwraiths. He cowered against the stony bank. A long tilted valley, a deep gulf of shadow, ran back far into the mountains. Upon the further side, some way within the valley's arms, high on a rocky seat upon the black knees of the Ethelduath, stood the walls and tower of Minas Morgul. All was dark about it, earth and sky, but it was lit with light. Not the imprisoned moonlight welling through the marbled walls of Minas Ithil long ago, tower of the moon, fair and radiant in the hollow of the hills. Paler indeed than the moon ailing in some slow eclipse was the light of it now, wavering and blowing like a noisome exhalation of decay, a corpse light, a light that illuminated nothing. In the walls and tower windows showed, like countless black holes looking inward into emptiness. But the topmost course of the tower revolved slowly, first one way and then another, a huge ghostly head leering into the night. For a moment the three companions stood there, shrinking, staring up with unwilling eyes. Gollum was the first to recover. Again he pulled at their cloaks urgently, but he spoke no word. Almost he dragged them forward. Every step was reluctant, and time seemed to slow its pace, so that between the raising of a foot and the setting of it down, minutes of loathing passed. So they came slowly to the white bridge. Here the road, gleaming faintly, passed over the stream in the midst of the valley, and went on, winding deviously up towards the city's gate, a black mouth opening in the outer circle of the northward walls. Wide flats lay on either bank, shadowy meads filled with pale white flowers. Luminous these were, too, beautiful and yet horrible of shape, like the demented forms in an uneasy dream, and they gave forth a faint sickening charnel smell. An odour of rottenness filled the air. From mead to mead the bridge sprang. Figures stood there at its head, carven with cunning in forms human and bestial, but all corrupt and loathsome. The water flowing beneath was silent, and it steamed, but the vapour that rose from it, curling and twisting about the bridge, was deadly cold. Frodo felt his senses reeling and his mind darkening. Then suddenly, as if some force were at work other than his own will, he began to hurry, tottering forward, his groping hands held out, his head lolling from side to side. Both Sam and Gollum ran after him. Sam caught his master in his arms, as he stumbled and almost fell, right on the threshold of the bridge.
"Not that way, not that way," whispered Gollum,
but the breath between his teeth seemed to tear the heavy stillness like a whistle, and he cowered to the ground in terror. "Hold up, Mr. Frodo," muttered Sam in Frodo's ear. "Come back, not that way. Gollum says not, and for once I agree with him." Frodo passed his hand over his brow and wrenched his eyes away from the city on the hill. The luminous tower fascinated him, and he fought the desire that was on him to run up the gleaming road towards its gate. At last, with an effort, he turned back, and as he did so, he felt the ring resisting him, dragging at the chain about his neck,
and his eyes, too, as he looked away, seemed for the moment to have been blinded. The darkness before him was impenetrable. Gollum, crawling on the ground like a frightened animal, was already vanishing into the gloom. Sam, supporting and guiding his stumbling master, followed after him as quickly as he could. Not far from the near bank of the stream, there was a gap in the stone wall beside the road. Through this they passed, and Sam saw that they were on a narrow path that gleamed faintly at first, as the main road did, until climbing above the meads of deadly flowers, it faded and went dark, winding its crooked way up into the northern sides of the valley. Along this path the hobbits trudged, side by side, unable to see Gollum in front of them, except when he turned back to beckon them on. Then his eyes shone with a green-white light, reflecting the noisome Morgul sheen, perhaps, or kindled by some answering mood within. Of that deadly gleam and of the dark eye-holes Frodo and Sam were always conscious, ever glancing fearfully over their shoulders, and ever dragging their eyes back to find the darkening path. Slowly they laboured on. As they rose above the stench and vapours of the poisonous stream, their breath became easier and their heads clearer. But now their limbs were deadly tired, as if they had walked all night under a burden, or had been swimming long against a heavy tide of water. At last they could go no further without a halt. Frodo stopped and sat down on a stone. They had now climbed up to the top of a great hump of bare rock. Ahead of them there was a bay in the valley side, and round the head of this the path went on, no more than a wide ledge with a chasm on the right. Across the sheer southward face of the mountain it crawled upwards, until it disappeared into the blackness above. "I must rest a while, Sam," whispered Frodo. "It's heavy on me, Sam, lad, very heavy. I wonder how far I can carry it. Anyway, I must rest before we venture on to that." He pointed to the narrow way ahead. "Shh, shh," hissed Gollum, hurrying back to them. "Shh!" His fingers were on his lips, and he shook his head urgently. Tugging at Frodo's sleeve, he pointed towards the path. But Frodo would not move. "Not yet," he said. "Not yet." Weariness and more than weariness oppressed him. It seemed as if a heavy spell was laid on his mind and body. "I must rest," he muttered. At this Gollum's fear and agitation became so great that he spoke again, hissing behind his hand, as if to keep the sound from unseen listeners in the air.
"Not here, no. Not rest here, fools. Eyes can see us. When they come to the bridge, they will see us. Come away. Climb, climb, come."
"Come, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "He's right again. We can't stay here."
"All right," said Frodo in a remote voice, as of one speaking half asleep. "I will try." Wearily he got to his feet. But it was too late. At that moment the rock quivered and trembled beneath them. The great rumbling noise, louder than ever before, rolled in the ground and echoed in the mountains. Then with searing suddenness there came a great red flash. Far beyond the eastern mountains it leapt into the sky and splashed the lowering clouds with crimson. In that valley of shadow and cold deathly light, it seemed unbearably violent and fierce. Peaks of stone and ridges like notched knives sprang out in staring black against the uprushing flame in Gorgoroth. Then came a great crack of thunder, and Minas Morgul answered. There was a flare of livid lightnings, forks of blue flame springing up from the tower and from the encircling hills into the sullen clouds. The earth groaned, and out of the city there came a cry, mingled with harsh high voices as of birds of prey, and the shrill neighing of horses wild with rage and fear, there came a rending screech, shivering, rising swiftly to a piercing pitch beyond the range of hearing. The hobbits wheeled round towards it, and cast themselves down, holding their hands upon their ears. As the terrible cry ended, falling back through a long, sickening wail to silence, Frodo slowly raised his head. Across the narrow valley, now almost on a level with his eyes, the walls of the evil city stood, and its cavernous gate, shaped like an open mouth with gleaming teeth, was gaping wide, and out of the gate an army came. All that host was clad in sable, dark as the night. Against the wan walls and the luminous pavement of the road, Frodo could see them, small black figures in rank upon rank, marching swiftly and silently, passing outwards in an endless stream. Before them went a great cavalry of horsemen, moving like ordered shadows, and at their head was one greater than all the rest, a rider, all black, save that on his hooded head he had a helm like a crown that flickered with a perilous light. Now he was drawing near the bridge below, and Frodo's staring eyes followed him, unable to wink or to withdraw. Surely there was the Lord of the Nine Riders returned to earth to lead his ghastly host to battle? Here, yes, here indeed was the haggard king whose cold hand had smitten down the ring-bearer with his deadly knife. The old wound throbbed with pain, and a great chill spread towards Frodo's heart. Even as these thoughts pierced him with dread, and held him bound as with a spell, the rider halted suddenly, right before the entrance of the bridge, and behind him all the host stood still. There was a pause, a dead silence. Maybe it was the ring that called to the Wraith Lord, and for a moment he was troubled, sensing some other power within his valley. This way and that turned the dark head, helmed and crowned with fear, sweeping the shadows with its unseen eyes. Frodo waited, like a bird at the approach of a snake, unable to move. And as he waited, he felt, more urgent than ever before, the command that he should put on the ring. But great as the pressure was, he felt no inclination now to yield to it. He knew that the ring would only betray him, and that he had not, even if he put it on, the power to face the Morgul King. Not yet. There was no longer any answer to that command in his own will, dismayed by terror though it was, and he felt only the beating upon him of a great power from outside. It took his hand, and as Frodo watched with his mind, not willing it but in suspense, as if he looked on some old story far away, it moved the hand inch by inch towards the chain upon his neck. Then his own will stirred. Slowly it forced the hand back and set it to find another thing, a thing lying hidden near his breast. Cold and hard it seemed as his grip closed on it. The file of Galadriel, so long treasured and almost forgotten till that hour. As he touched it, for a while all thought of the ring was banished from his mind. He sighed and bent his head. At that moment the Wraith King turned and spurred his horse and rode across the bridge, and all his dark host followed him. Maybe the elven hoods defied his unseen eyes, and the mind of his small enemy, being strengthened, had turned aside his thought. But he was in haste. Already the hour had struck, and at his great master's bidding he must march with war into the west. Soon he had passed, like a shadow into shadow, down the winding road, and behind him still the black ranks crossed the bridge. So great an army had never issued from that vale since the days of Isildur's might. No host so fell and strong in arms had yet assailed the fords of Anduin, and yet it was but one, and not the greatest of the hosts, that Mordor now sent forth. Frodo stirred, and suddenly his heart went out to Faramir. "The storm has burst at last," he thought. "This great array of spears and swords is going to Osgiliath. Will Faramir get across in time?" He guessed it. But did he know the hour? And who can now hold the fords when the king